Gemma Kearney is a good friend and also an amazing BBC presenter that I came across working with when she was the host of One Extra with Trevor Nelson, who was a big deal in the UK R&B and hip hop scene. She's also a fashion stylist, and she's now got a very exciting project coming up that is coming to New York, which I can't wait to talk to her about. Gemma, welcome. Thank you for being here and chatting with me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited. I'm kind of in the middle of a storm.
You look amazing.
Thank you. Outside, the wind is crazy. My Wi-Fi's gone mad. My baby's gone mad. So this is an exciting, haphazard transatlantic recording happening right now. And I'm really happy to be here.
Tell us where you are.
So I'm currently actually in Margate on the southeast coast of England, where I used to live. I'm based in Scotland these days, but I've popped down to see some friends and to get on with some writing because I have a deadline of 70,000 words on Friday. So I put my baby on, put her in the papoose, got on the sleeper train from Edinburgh to London on Friday night, and somehow got myself to the coast, and I'm hiding away. And it's kind of snuggly. It's pretty snuggly, yeah.
So, congratulations on the baby. You have a lot of new projects going on right now. And you look amazing for it. It's obviously suiting you. Tell me about the new project, first of all, and then we're going to dive into a whole load of other stuff. But you have a new project coming up. It's going to be launched next month in New York, that's right?
Yeah, The Immortal Sisterhood. It's a big project, a special project. It started as a book, which was a series of love letters to 12 women throughout history. And it became so much more. It's now become a live avant-garde theatre performance. It's become a ceramics collection of 12 altar-like figurines. And it's a bit like I have created a crew of 12 imaginary amazing friends. I feel really changed by the project. And I kind of roll about with them. I go on my usual adventures and do my weird and wonderful things, but like not alone. Obviously, I've given birth to what I keep calling the 13th goddess. But at the same time, thinking about the history of these women, from Hatshepsut, who was a genderless pharaoh in ancient Egypt, to Grace Jones, you know, who's alive and kicking now. They've become like in my crew somehow.
It's like a dream crew. How did this project come about? Like, what is the dream magic that started this adventure?
I went to see a film, which was a documentary about Bette Davis, the funk singer, not Bette Davis, the Hollywood star. And I was absolutely overwhelmed with this awe for her style, for her tunes, for her swagger. And I could not believe that I didn't actually know who she was. I've been taken to see this documentary, and a friend of mine was like, you surely know about Bette Davis. And I was like, I actually didn't know who this person was, and she was incredible. So I felt like I had to kind of show some kind of respect and honouring to this woman I had like such a connection to. In a weird way, I felt connected to her when I saw her, and I wanted to write a love letter to her, and then it became this love letter to a number of women, and I had to choose 12 in the end, so there's 12 in the book.
Wow. So can I ask, who are the others?
So in there we have got Una Marson, who was the first Black woman on the BBC to have a permanent show, and she was also a poet, and she came from Jamaica. Pamela Coleman Smith, who is from the early 1900s and was a real incredible artist, an illustrator, and she illustrated some of the tarot cards that we still use today, but they weren't published in her name. They're called the Rider-Waite deck. As I said, Grace Jones, the only live and kicking sister in the sisterhood, thankfully. Hatshepsut,
very cool.
The genderless pharaoh from ancient Kemet. Mary C. Cole, who a lot of people know as the doctress, who was on the front lines of the Crimean War using herbalist techniques from Jamaica. Nanny of the Maroons, who again was another Jamaican rebel who was like part of an uprising and kind of kept a guerrilla army in the mountains of Jamaica. Oh my goodness, I'm being put on the spot. The 12, my lovely 12. Mary Wollstonecraft, who was the mother of Mary Shelley, and was kind of the first radically feminist travel writer. Who else have we got in there? I can send you a list. I was going to send you the introduction to the book, but
How did you come across these women?
Do you know what?
Yeah, they all sound amazing. I haven't heard of that many of them, I'm embarrassed to say.
This is how the project started.
How did you come across them?
Yeah, this is the same. Like, when I first found out about Bette Davis, I couldn't believe it, and I was embarrassed. So then I started to do this deep dive. I started to do this kind of study, this dreamlike study of joy, like not by doing a traditional course, but by archiving somehow, like these hidden stories. And they were people that I've just come across, people that I've read about or spoken about with friends, and then it just became this epic love affair.
Well, I'm grateful to you for resurfacing them because they sound amazing, but I wouldn't bump into them naturally. So we need someone to tell us these stories and tell me how the live show is going to encapsulate all of this.
So like I said, this is an organism of a project. It's mahoosive. And the more I wrote over the course of 5 years, the more I felt quite witchy, to be honest. I felt like these people were seeping into my subconscious. Like things were connected to them. It even happens to me still now. I'll walk down a street and it'll be connected. That's my baby, by the way. It'll be connected to one of the women.
The 13th goddess.
The 13th goddess right here, reminding everybody that she's part of it. but yeah, I feel like...
I love her.
She's really good. I feel like there's places that are connected to these women. There's parts of popular culture. There's parts of nature. Like, there's so many things that kind of make up a human and make up great women that we don't always know how to honor. And I know that there's like a real... I'm gonna put in a dummy, hold up. There's a real trend, let's say, to do biopics of great women's lives and I find some of them to be perhaps voyeuristic, and there is maybe a place for a more abstract type of reverence, and the way that our ancestors would have told stories would have been to dance and sing and tell poetry and to move their bodies. And suddenly I thought to myself, perhaps this could be a live performance. So I started to workshop and devise with different interdisciplinary artists. So that includes two opera singers, a cellist, a movement director, and myself. I've ended up in the show myself. I'm now a contemporary dancer myself.
Amazing. I can totally see you as that. You kind of do everything. Like I said, you've been like behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, you're writing, you're directing, you're producing. But it sounds like you're channeling these stories for these women, and it's deeply personal to you. Can you tell me a little bit about how you connect with them?
So the book is...
And why you connect with them, I guess.
The book itself, The Immortal Sisterhood, is the beating heart of the project. The performance, The Immortal Sisterhood Live, is an abstract interpretation to these women's lives and being inspired by the text of the literature. But when we go back to the book, it's part biog, part memoir. So you can read parts of their lives and parts of my own. And the reason why I wanted to oscillate between their stories and mine is because I really do believe that actually, autonomously, and when you wipe away status or achievement or success or hierarchy, there is a deep connection between all women. And I really wanted to socially challenge what we even define as women.
Baby.
What we even define as womanhood. Marsha P. Johnson is in there, an incredible trans rights activist from the 1970s in New York who...
Actually, I live across the street from a park with her namesake. Oh. We often go and play at Marsha P. Johnson Park. So I do know that one. And she's amazing and celebrated in New York, but probably not across the world.
And that's what I mean. That's exactly what I mean about place. So great women find each other and they go places, whether it's us talking on a podcast. You know, like with my babies cooing in the background whilst there's a storm outside and you're across the sea.
It could not be a more perfect environment for displaying your work, like all your best works in that room.
And that's what, you know, and you're still connected to the sisterhood, not only because you identify as a woman and you're a mother too, and we've known each other from parts of our creative work in the past, you know, our careers. But you now live opposite a park, a place named after one of the sisterhood. And this is the type of thing that just happens throughout the process. And I needed to document it because it's all these like touchstones for us to learn about one another and to and to bring us together.
She loves your project. She's got a lot to say about it.
Oh my god, I'm going to pick her up because she just wants to be in. So I just, yeah, there's all these mystic connections, and I believe that regardless of when we lived, when we were around, or even what happened to us in terms of tragedy, which is, you know, a lot. What's focused on in a biopic of a great woman's life often, when we learn the act of reverence and honouring, it can be abstract, it can be in poetry, it can be by naming a park or a place that's beautiful, and that's how we can connect to history in a way that I actually think is really away from the patriarchal structures, which I think that we need to learn to move away from sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, having lived in America now for 13 years, they teach oral history, which is an accessible way of telling stories about history for everybody, which is, I think, reflective of Native American culture in the way that they teach it, but it was also around the campfire everywhere in the world at some point. And then we moved away from it and it became behind locked doors and about who was telling the story. And those stories were only accessible through a certain type of education. And then we all learnt one narrative, which isn't what history is. You know, the winner, generally it's the winner's side.
And that's exactly it.
I love that you're doing that.
That's exactly it. I mean, my background, my heritage, I've got Scottish heritage, I've got Jamaican heritage, and I explore that with as much kind of vigour and grace as possible. Doesn't mean that I don't come across things that are deeply uncomfortable or sad or painful, but at the same time, I've got so much from connecting to my roots, and it goes all the way back to this sense of oral knowledge and ancient wisdom and learning from the earth, you know. And I think that that has been a profound, and I feel so lucky that I've gone on this journey through these 12 women and finding ways to express, like, via them, myself and anybody who finds the project, because it brings us back to something that is quite human, and that is that we have a lot of love, I think, for other humans and their stories, and in all that beauty and all that wholeness, but we don't in current modern times know how to necessarily express that beyond a heart emoji, beyond a post.
Yeah, and you know, who's allowed to write history and how are they writing it? This is a different expression of that. And people don't necessarily want to sit down when they're absorbing information all the time. That's how we've put education into play in our society. But, you know, sometimes people got to move their bodies. Some people got to sing. Everybody's different, and we can embrace, like, the whole person. Well, hopefully we're moving to a model where children are accepted as the whole person from that stage, and then feel good about maybe they are not a desk-bound person who is going to understand history that way, but maybe they do connect with their ancestors in a different way. But do you mind if I circle back to, like, how you grew with it? Like, it was 5 years ago that you started this project. So pre-pandemic?
Yeah, I actually got the deal in 2019. And I started working with Canongate, who are a really cool publisher. By March 2020, I was looking down the barrel of a global pandemic. I was living alone. And one of my really good friends had passed away. And she'd chosen to take her own life. She was in the public eye. So it wasn't just me and my friends and her family that were grieving. There was a whole kind of nation grieving, really popular TV presenter who was a really good friend of mine who died in such a sad way. And I did 3 months of lockdown completely alone, living in a house that overlooked the sea. God. On the southeast coast of England, and I had this book deal and no idea whether the world was actually ending or how to process such a deep grief. And my book was there, just sort of by the side, called The Immortal Sisterhood, and I didn't really know what to do with that for quite a long time. As a creative and as a broadcaster and as a communicator, which is what I think I am predominantly.
At this point, Gemma's Wi-Fi dropped out, so she nipped over to her friend's flat and joined me again. I think we were at March 2020. You were in Margate.
Yeah.
You'd had trying times and had a book deal.
Yeah, there we were, exactly that, trying times and a book deal. Thank you for it. And the book being called The Immortal Sisterhood specifically felt really too on the nose somehow, like, with what was going on. There was so much loss everywhere, and I was dealing with the loss of a friend, so I couldn't quite write the book. It sort of just sat there, you know, the idea was there. What I did do as a communicator is, instead I hosted a series of, like, underground pirate radio shows.
Did you? Going back to my roots. I love it.
It was called Night Waves, and every Wednesday.
I love it.
In the evening between 9 and 11, we would broadcast online and speak to people all over the world, different writers and thinkers, and play tunes.
Wow.
It was really special. It was really, really, really fun. You can still listen to it on SoundCloud. There's some really...
I'm going to listen. I didn't know about this. I'm out of the loop. You know, the some of the biggest creativity comes from these, like, oppressed times. Like, it has to go somewhere, and then it goes, like, kind of different and weird and imaginative in a way that it can't when you're not in those times. Oh, Gemma, you've gone quiet.
No way. I'm so determined. We are doing this, even if I go all over my game.
No, whatever you do, just turn it back on. Yes.
It's like the pirate radio all over again. It's like, this will happen.
We'll make this work.
Can you ask back? I was going to time travel, which is something that the Immortal Sisterhood has really allowed me to do. And I was imagining if we were having this conversation about art and creativity hundreds of years ago, regardless of place, as two women, we would be talking about it probably like with more folklore and folktale and less afraid to be like that. So, for example, somebody told me that when babies are born, they remember their past lives until they're four. And that's why they, you know, sometimes stare at trees or they become really... I mean, who knows if this is true? I'm not saying that I'm not the soothsayer. I'm just passing on, like, the legend. And I love that. And I love that we can be magic and creative, because I think that actually there's a liminal space that's so accessible to us when we are children. But then perhaps we can tap back into that as mothers, from, you know, seeing the miracle of life happen from our bodies into actuality. And I think that there is such a fine line between art and magic, and I've really found that with researching the women that I have. And let's have more of it. Let's not be afraid to try it.
And also free people up to try it. We're all so judgmental of things. I remember, I've been a producer for years, and you always have to have a judgment on something. But actually, if you come to it without judgment, what would that reaction be? Like, without all your baggage, just come to it with an open mind. There was a study that NASA did, someone was telling me, where they went out to find creative genius that could work at NASA. And they wanted to see how to find them and how to tap into that stream coming out of college. And they found like 2 to 3% of the population were creative geniuses. And then someone kind of turned it on its head and thought, let's test children younger at like 3, 4, basically under 5-year-olds. And 75% were creative geniuses. Wow. So like what people were taking from that study was like, we basically kill what is special and creative about these children through having to be part of our culture. They've like squashed it by the time they've left college or university, which is, it is a factor in our society, but it's something to think about. Like, where are we not being ourselves? Because that's actually what the special sauce is.
Absolutely.
And if we're squashing that to fit, what happens to the special sauce?
And also, it's quite interesting you describing finding expression through making your own artwork, and as a creative practice, it becoming perhaps more angry or a place to put rage. And to be fair, you know, there's a lot of things to be angry about. And I think creativity, when harnessed, is actually so good for our mental health and for being able to just express. And I think, again, children aren't judged for doing that. You know, if a child has a tantrum, then we try and work out the root cause. And, you know, especially in times where we don't like discipline in the same way, we like try and like work it out on a more layered level. And I think that probably could be applied to us all. You know, full emotions. Capitalism has made us feel like we have to be happy and perfect and polished. And it's impossible. It's absolutely impossible. We're humans.
Yeah. And, you know, I think holding space for rage... Like, there's a lot of anxiety and rage around, and it's like, well, it doesn't go away if people say, oh, well, they're really angry, you know, like, be quiet, can you calm down? Like, you have to just be there for it And not all anger is a bad mm-hmm. thing. When it hurts other people, it yeah. can become a bad yeah. thing, you know. But it can be channeled, and it's actually like a signifier of something deeper, of like, my boundaries are being violated. I don't want to be here. And that's a good thing, to have boundaries and to express when they are violated.
I would totally.
But anyway.
But it all goes back to my project in my mind, because I'm living and breathing the Immortal Sisterhood at the moment. Obviously, the world is the world and it is what it is. But at the same time, becoming an artist, or like stepping into that role of making performance, directing performance, performing in performance, writing poetry and not sticking to the rules, or even having colloquialisms or slang or punctuation in a way that's different to what, you know, I got taught in English class. Like, all of it is really freeing. And in some ways I keep saying, like, oh, I've started a punk band, and it feels really good to finally start a punk band as a new mum nearly age 40 to try and describe the project. And it's all about exertion, and it's about, like, being able to hold all of these big feelings, like joy, like mm-hmm. cluelessness, like, help, you know, like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, all of that can actually be held in creative practice. And I found that to be really, really liberating.
I think that, like, everyone needs a bit more resilience to a range of emotions. It feels like in mainstream culture, we can cope with happy and joyful, and we can be really respectful about those emotions, but we're a little judgmental of the others. But that is also, I feel like women are penalized for showing them more than men. I don't know if that's, if some men may disagree with me there, but I feel like women aren't allowed to be angry because
I would say
conformist.
Being a black woman is even statistically proven to be even more at the brunt of that judgment due to the trope yeah. of being an angry black woman. And, right. you know, it's but, really, it's difficult sometimes in certain places to be your full self. But having studied and read and researched and taken myself places, I really want to provide like a hopeful narrative that the more we have the courage to be ourselves, the greater everything is, the greater life is, the greater uh-huh. the environment is, like the greater, like everyone else around us can be when we really learn how to be ourselves. And it's scary. It is scary, but it's really, really cool and really, really fun.
And do you feel more like yourself doing this project? Is this a coming of age of how you really feel? Or how some, maybe something that was suppressed that's coming out through these goddesses.
Honestly, I feel alive. I feel so inspired. I keep being connected to different people in different ways. You know, the fact that we reconnected, and here I am coming.
You're
to
amazing.
New York.
You're amazing in that you have an energy which is incredibly warm and open that people want to come back to. Like, it's not, it's on purpose that they do it. It's intentional. And you're creating that by your energy, for sure. To cycle back, I just want to know a little bit more about you and how personal the project is. So doing my research, like, I know you, but I actually didn't know you when I researched you. So you were born, you were raised in Birmingham, is that right, in the UK?
So it's complicated.
Or in the Midlands.
It's complicated. I was born in the Midlands, yes. I was born in Birmingham, in Moseley, in 1985, in the middle of England. Like, I feel like everything about me is just, like, so kind of, like, weirdly mixed. And then we moved down to South London. So I lived in...
And what's your heritage?
My mum's family was Scottish. in terms of my granddad and grandma on that side, were both born and bred Glasgow. And my dad is first generation Jamaican British. So his mum was part of the Windrush generation. So I'm Jamaican Scottish.
And how...
That's how I describe myself. But like, it depends what day you catch me.
I mean, like, it's an amazing mix. I actually love all those cultures. they're all cultures I want to live in. But how was that growing up in Birmingham, like in the Midlands in the 80s?
So we moved when I was 2 from Birmingham down to South London. So I actually went to primary school in London, which was a lot. Like, it was cosmopolitan. It was, you know, it was mixed. It was multicultural. And then we moved even further south to like a commuter belt town called Horsham in West Sussex, kind of near Gatwick Airport.
Yeah.
And that's when things...
Yeah, I know Horsham. Not well, but I know. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It always seems to get a shout out, annoyingly, because I kind of don't like Horsham. Especially like, if this is going out predominantly to people in Brooklyn, like all I can say is you don't need to know about Horsham.
Doesn't need to be on the tourist guide.
Go to Birmingham.
West Sussex.
Definitely check out Brum. It's really good. But yeah, it was a place where I didn't feel very like I had a sense of belonging. My mum is white and she was a single parent at the time. She had 2 mixed race daughters. I went to a very stuffy secondary school, which was an all girls school, that really cared about being on the league tables and telling us off all the time.
Me too. It was painful.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. And looking back, it's just so kind of madly archaic and wasn't right for me. I've never been diagnosed with any particular neurodivergence, but I would definitely say that I had a troubled childhood in many ways, and that was displayed in not always being able to pay attention. I do think that my brain is probably different to kind of like your typical normal brain. And at the same time, I was dealing with things and didn't really feel like I had many places to go. I felt quite othered, like being like the only like person with my skin color in my year. It was really tough. It was hard. Yeah. I got told that I was like, I would ask too many questions.
What is that in the school?
I don't even know. I don't even understand. I don't know why I was reprimanded so much for asking questions, especially as it became my job.
You're like, what do I do with this skill? I'll just go and be really successful.
And I was cheeky, but I was always interested in literature. I was always interested in drama. I was always interested in the arts, but it was really hard to find a sense of place. Like me, age 14, I just was like, felt all the feelings, and nobody was like me, and nobody had, you know, there was, most of my friends' parents were still together, as an example. There's loads of other things, but you know, even that, I just wasn't represented.
And, yeah.
I mean, except by the Spice Girls. Like when they came out, they changed my life.
Scary Spice.
They were a cool bunch of like,
she was so nice, Mel B.
Yeah, exactly. Women where I was like, oh my god, I've got hair like Mel B. This is it. I'm seen.
Well, you've been so successful in broadcasting and media, but it's hard because it's been a challenging environment. I mean, I've worked in it behind the scenes for a long time where there are boxes. If you don't fit in the box, it's really tricky. And there's not an obvious route from someone else above you. There's no trailblazers. It's not pioneer world out there. Now with content creation, there's a lot more representation and people see who themselves in a lot of different people and media is fragmented. But in the 80s, when I was growing up, I was half Indian and went to a very league table focused girls' school. And there was nobody who was mixed. That amalgamation of culture was difficult because you've got one foot in each and you love both, but you're neither one. And it's a tricky navigation when you're trying to form your identity and there's really nothing out there for you that feels like you. But I'm interested because it must be part of the backstory of where this project has come from.
Yeah, I think like everything has led to this. When I look back at all my projects, there is such a mixture of things that I've done. And sometimes when they're happening, it's so like full on, you know, even with the Immortal Sisterhood, it's been so hard to get sponsorship for the show, for example. That's been, it's almost taken me completely off course and me decided not to take one of the best opportunities ever, which is to premiere it at the Lincoln Center. But at the same...
Do you need sponsorship?
Yeah.
Do you need sponsorship?
Yeah, still we do.
Show?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what can people do? So like brands, if they can sponsor...
Yeah.
The performance.
Yeah, we have we do have a GoFundMe. We have plenty of decks that we've pitched out there. We've like tried the different grants, and so far it's been completely self-funded by me. So yeah, if anybody wants to align with something absolutely,
I mean, that's incredible. Do you know how many people have projects? Well, everyone has projects, and they don't take the leap to make it a thing. Mm. And you've done that. And now you're in the... You're in motion.
I know it.
You're doing it. And it's you. It's your story.
Yeah.
It's your writing. You're channeling this artistic project. And you're getting it off the ground just purely by your own means. Can we talk about the gallery?
Yeah.
Because you do live my dream of opening an art gallery in Scotland.
Oh, yeah. Saying in the sense of things being so full on at the time of them being in motion is that I don't always get the opportunity to reflect as to like how important they are for me to do. So, you know, I've been a broadcaster for 17 years. I've been a published author for 7 to 8 years. And now this is the next thing. This is the next organism. It's this big thing. It's a show. It's a book. And it's also a ceramics collection, which I haven't even mentioned, where I collaborated with a ceramicist to make an actualized clay as altars. It's this beautiful, big universe that I'm trying to create. And the thing is that everything leads to the next thing. Everything is actually connected. So people sometimes feel like, whoa, Gemma, you do loads. And it's like, I'm built this way. It is who I am in my heart. I've lived in a world and a time and in industries where I have to justify myself consistently because people don't always like get me on the surface or can categorize me, which is, it is what it is. Sometimes that's fun and sometimes it's exhausting. And yeah. It leaves me and renders me a really resilient, energetic, open, multiplicitous human that wants to try lots of things. And I really love building community. And when I moved to Edinburgh, it was during the pandemic. And I have some friends there and I wanted to be in Scotland and it felt really exciting. And then naturally, I went past the local shop and I've been going past it for a while. And my partner, all the time, beans around us in our house all the time. He runs a cafe down the road and I was like, maybe you can do a different one and I can like do things in it. He was like, I'm pretty busy actually. So I was like, okay, I think I want the shop. And again, I put my own money into it and
I rented this shop.
I got the lease on a shop and it's...
And how long is the lease for?
The lease is for 5 years. I've had it for 2.
That's amazing. It's just amazing.
I'm glad that you say that.
I love it. It's called number 22
because that's like where it is. It's number 22 on the road. And it's this ambiguous space. It's an evolving spot. It's so sweet where there's therapy rooms in the back. There's a bar. We've tried loads of different things. We've had live cello gigs. We've had yoga workshops.
Oh, I wish it was in my neighborhood.
It's so sweet.
It sounds amazing.
Yeah, I'm having a lovely time.
So you're creating hoping... a community.
Yeah, it just brings people in. People come in and say, like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I've actually got an exhibition going on. So I exhibited the Sisterhood ceramics, which are part of the Immortal Sisterhood project, for the first time.
So there. Are you doing the ceramics?
No, I commissioned an amazing ceramicist called Charlie Russell.
What's
Charlie Russell is her name.
Charlie.
And she makes these, her signature is these clay goddesses. And I've got a load, I collect them. And then I called her and I said, I'm writing. And at this point, I was in Cartagena in Colombia doing a residency. And I had everywhere. And I was just coming up to 3 months pregnant, and I was writing, and it was all going on. The creativity was happening. So this is rewind to January 2024. And I said, Charlie, oh my God, like, I think that you should like do a collection, and it should be based on the women in my book. She was like, I love it. So then we did Zooms very much like this, to be honest. But we lit candles and we didn't record it. And we just talked about all of the women, and we kind of held these seances almost. It felt a bit like that. Talking about the lives of all the 12.
Wow.
And we would talk about the flora and the fauna and the things that they overcame. And then suddenly this collection of 12 mammoth, they're huge, clay goddesses has been created. And they're absolutely gorgeous. I'm in love with them.
Will you send me pictures
yes.
of those? And so there's 12 that all represent the
yeah,
women.
Yeah, the Grace Jones one.
And how big are they?
Out of this world.
I'm so inspired. How big are they?
I can't remember the dimensions, but they're big. They're not little statues. They're like when they were being put up on these plinths, when Charlie drove them from the Margate, Southeast England coast up to Edinburgh to exhibit them at number 22 in my shop. She took them out of bubble wrap and was putting them on these marble plinths, and I was crying. I was just like, this is just so incredible. Aww. And if anybody knows Grace Jones that is listening, she needs to know about her goddess, because she needs to see it.
Yeah.
It's so wonderful.
Have you okay, we'll talk. We need to send this to
yeah.
her people.
Yeah, we do. I really want her to know about the project, but she most of all she needs to see the goddess in ode of her brilliance, like the fact that this has been created
yeah.
from clay. And then, yeah, the other women are all represented. There's all sorts of little clues and codes and sort of colours and patterns that are resonant to the lives of the women.
Wow. Okay, so coming up for people who are in New York City at the Lincoln Center.
Yeah.
Oh, just the Lincoln Center. Don't start big. Just go to the Lincoln Center.
I'm so like thrillingly excited. So that kind of like thing where you're like terrified and excited. So it's going to be at the Davis.
Well, it's such.
Go on.
It's such a cool space, but I would say a supportive arts community. I feel like the Lincoln Center crowd is quite open-minded.
We're going to have a party as well, you know. So.
And then it breaks down to a dance
yeah,
party.
Yeah.
There's the performance.
I'm trying to make sure that regardless of what people think of, you know, the premiere of this unfurling piece of performance art, that we get to shake it out together. It's January, just before the inauguration. And to be there as
it's time to celebrate women.
To bring women together in this way, in a city that's really pertinent in the book as well, like, New York City features quite a lot, because it was quite an important city for Grace, for Pamela, for Audre Lorde, who's in the book as well. You know, like, so it feels so kinetic to be there doing this for the first time. And the cast is predominantly Black. It's Black-led. It's my directorial debut. There just feels something
Amazing.
Really, like, very special and poignant about it. And, people can come and watch it for free. It's on the free program on the 17th of January. We start at 7.
You have to book tickets online.
Yeah.
Is that book tickets?
You can
yep.
go onto the Lincoln Center website. It's in the atrium space.
Yep.
So you can literally just
yep.
put into any search engine the Immortal Sisterhood live at the Lincoln Center, and you'll see this beautiful black and white photograph of all the cast with me roaring laughing. And yeah, it'll tell you all the information there.
And if you come, and if you go to Scotland, go and visit number 22, have a little treatment in the back.
Yes.
There might be a live cello performance. Have a drink. Look at the ceramics of the goddesses.
Absolutely. That's online as well. It's number22.uk. But all of the links are in my Instagram, which is Gem Again. Me again, GEMAGAIN. Easy to find.
I'm so inspired by this project, and I'm so happy that you're channeling it for all of us. I can't wait to see it on January 17th, and thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Thank you.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.